What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Lamar Wilson, aka Big Mar. In 2013, he began telling all of his friends and family about Bitcoin when the price was $136. Lamar learned everything he could about it, bought some coins, and even began building his first Bitcoin product, the Fiva Hot Wallet. He even gave away Bitcoin to his mother. Lamar knew that we were entering a new era. The same way the internet changed how we receive information, Bitcoin has and will change how we handle money. The future is here, and we are just getting started. Big Mar is all about love, freedom, humor, and motivation. He co-founded the Black Bitcoin Billionaires Club on Clubhouse and holds court there just about every day, giving away sats and doing Satoshi's work. Lamar Wilson, the king of Clubhouse, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. The king of Clubhouse. It's funny. Yeah, man. I'm doing well, man. Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. It's really exciting to chat with you. I just kind of want to get into it. Let's just get right into Black Bitcoin Billionaires Clubhouse and how that all came together and what's going on there.
Yeah, man. Like you said, I've been trying to tell people about Bitcoin for a very long time. And part of that led me to Facebook, where I started a group called Coinda with a few hundred other people. We all started it together at the same time. And all I did, and on my Facebook page, I was educating people about Bitcoin, almost in the same way you see me on Clubhouse. And so I've been trying to do this for a while. And one of the people who had been with me in Coinda, which is about 26,000 people strong in and of itself, he hit me up and said, Lamar, you'll love Clubhouse. It's like right up your wheelhouse. It's exactly what, you know, what we've been doing all of these years. And I think it'll be good for you. So I was like, all right, let me go check it out. I didn't even have an iOS device at the time. So I went and I borrowed my niece's iPod, a little iPod Touch. And that's how I first got on Clubhouse. So I got on there and I realized, I was like, yeah, this is a great communication tool for me to be able to educate. So I was like, okay, we stayed on there, hung out. Then I learned you can make your own club. And I was like, man, I was like, we need to make a club called Black Bitcoin Billionaire. So I hit up my friend Zay, Isaiah Jackson, author of Bitcoin in Black America. And he was like, I said, man, look, I'm going to make a club called Black Bitcoin Billionaire. You down? He was like, all right. So when he said that, we talked about it a little bit more and we just got started. So we created the Genesis Block as our flagship show and we kept moving from there, man.
Yeah.
So,
Isaiah Jackson's been on the show. And that's kind of exciting. But so what is it about making a club? I mean, you've been doing this on social media for a while. Your clubs are popular. What is your approach to sort of community building? And were you always community building? Is this kind of a new thing?
See, it's funny, man, because I don't try to community build. I'm just straightforward, try to be as genuine as possible. And somehow this always happens. People in college used to call me a cult leader. Like, there's like, Lamar, what cult you building today? I'm like, I don't try to do this stuff, man. Like, I'm not, like, I always tell people, you should be a leader of yourself. Never follow anyone, really. Like, maybe a person can inspire you, but learn to be a leader of yourself. Learn to educate yourself, empower yourself. Because I'm not about being in power over anything. I want to empower people, right? And so, yeah, man, I don't know. It's just something I've always been able to do. Like, I grew a group in college. It was like, it wasn't even a fraternity, but it was kind of like a fraternity. And it grew from like four of us to like 60 people by my sophomore year. Like, I don't know. It just happens. That's the kind of thing that I've been able to do. But my real big thing about community is just basically setting some principles and guidelines. And I try to live by those principles. And I think that kind of attaches everyone to one another, right? Like certain principles like patience, consistent togetherness, that kind of stuff. When you start hearing it and people start to live by it, yeah, it kind of creates communities that stick together, man.
Yeah. And what's the kind of vibe in the community on Black Bitcoin Billionaires?
It's all love, man. It's all love, like love, patience, virtuous type things, right? And it's because, like, the one thing we understand and the reason why I'm even trying to do this is because I know that Bitcoin and all the things around it, around the technology and everything, hasn't really been marketed to my community. right, to the Black community. And so I understand that. And I also understand that you have to meet people at that level. So if that hadn't been marketed to the Black community, a lot of technology hasn't been pushed into the Black community from the standpoint of being producers of technology, then you have to realize that people are going to come from a different space and they're going to not know everything. And if you just treat them like, get off the stage, you don't know anything, you idiot, it doesn't really work, right? Because you basically are not meeting people where they are. And so we try to meet people where they are, be patient, take our time with them and allow them to come up so they can actually learn. I think those are the seeds that we continue to plant. And the great thing about it is once people come to the realization and the understanding of Bitcoin, they wind up spreading those same seeds in that same manner, right? It's like a culture, right? It's like a cultural thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, considering that you're kind of like boots on the ground, and you know, a lot of what you're doing here is empowering individuals, empowering working families via Bitcoin and entrepreneurial spirit, I believe, and thinking. So what kind of reaction do you see, you know, whether it's Clubhouse or in people that you meet amongst families and working class people?
Yeah, I think the thing is that just like every bull market gets people attracted. I always say there's no greater marketing tool in the whole entire cryptocurrency space than price. When the price is really high, a lot of people hear about it and come to it. When the price goes really low, a lot of people hear about it and then they talk about it to their family members. So either way, the price tends to bring people or drive people or draw people, right? Depending on which one. So what I do is I'm like, during this time, it allows us to basically, as we're building this group out, the response is that, because you ask the question, what's the response we see? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
The response that we've seen is that when during the bull market, people want to learn more about it. And the problem is during the bull market, that's when all your distractions come, all your scams, all your extra coins, all of this stuff. So I think during the bull market is the most important time to get people educated. Like whenever there's a super bull market, we have to be able to separate the noise from the signal. And a lot of this other stuff, the FUD, like you hear all of this stuff. Whenever the price of Bitcoin is going up, everybody comes out of woodwork and wants to say something about it. So you have to be able to tell people and explain to people, this is noise. The signal is Bitcoin is the greatest form of money that we have right now. It's hard money that you can actually control and own for yourself. And it actually equals freedom. Bitcoin equals freedom. Bitcoin equals empowerment, right? Those are the things that we try to get through all of the noise. And yeah, Stop looking at it for the fiat value and all the other stuff that everybody's talking about.
Right. Talking about Bitcoin's freedom. I heard you on a show talking about how like Bitcoin's like the underground railroad. And how do you kind of like think through like the current system and what that kind of empowers or brings to the table, what that incentivizes versus what Bitcoin does?
Yeah. See, that's the thing, man. For me, I've always said this because I am a spiritual person. I'm a Christian. So I look at Bitcoin as being the antithesis to our debt slavery that we have in this country. Like our debt slavery is always trying to make you work like that. There's no other way you can do it. If I lend you $100 and you have to give me back 110, what do you have to do for that 10? You're going to have to work. Like it's just pure logic, right? So, and that's how our entire system is set up. So our entire system is slavery. And the entire financial system is literal slavery, because if you think about it from that standpoint, you'll realize that as long as I have to keep working, that means I don't have control over myself. I'm not really free. Bitcoin is the opposite of that, because it is money that is actually provably scarce. Which means that as we move out into the future and you're working for this money, it's going to be ever so harder to get this same money, which means as more demand comes in, it's going to be worth more in the future. We don't have that kind of money right now because we keep borrowing. It's all a debt thing. It's all a debt system. And then on top of that, they continue to keep printing money. They keep putting money back into it, right? So now in this situation, if you think about it, they lent you the money, right? They lend you money that they didn't have in the first place. They create this money, lend it to you. And now when they lend it to you, putting that into the system actually makes the money that you had before worth less. So now you got to work even harder. It's like this constant cycle of like working, 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 working. And I think that once we start to understand money and understand what real hard money is, then we start to understand that, hey, there's another way. And that's why you can equate it to something like the Underground Railroad, because it helps get you out of this slavery, right? Trading your fiat dollars for Bitcoin allows you to start moving towards the north, so to speak, right? Start getting out of slavery, man.
Right. How do you usually do you usually bring up the slavery analogy, early on in your conversations with people, or is that something that comes out later?
It just comes out however it comes out, man. I got a million analogies. My mind thinks on analogies because I always feel like I have to educate people who might not have an awareness of the underlying technology, underlying mentality around money and economics, right? Because I have a degree in finance. Graduated honors, UK, University of Kentucky. And then I also have, by trade, I program. I'm a software developer. So for me, it's a little bit different, right? Because I can go both ways. I can go on the financial side and I can also go on the technical side. So I use these analogies to try to help people understand these complex ideas in a way that they can get it, right? Because they can understand and equate it to something that they see in nature, right? Or within themselves.
Yeah. I'd love to hear more about like how you got started with your entrepreneurial pursuits.
Been hustling my whole life, brother. Like I'm the kind of kid that sold candy at school. We had a lemonade stand. I'm the kid that everybody else just sat in front of their house at a car table. I get on my bike, leave my brother at the car table, and I go around the whole neighborhood telling them we got the best. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the kind of kid I've always been. I used to sell black cards door to door, like black Hallmark type cards door to door. Man, I've done, like, that's when I was 12. So I was like, I've been doing this forever. So entrepreneurially, that's just in me to try to figure out how to, you know, do things. And my first business was a duplex. I always say that was my very first real business that I had. I bought a duplex, lived on one side, me and my wife and my sons. And then, you know, rented the other side out. Then I bought some Cold Stone Creameries when I was working there as a scooper. I wound up working my way up to the point where I was able to buy the two in my town. So, yeah, man, I've just always been entrepreneurial. And I always tend to lean towards things that are kind of cutting edge, that are at the fringes. I don't know why. It's just my curiosity. And then I try to figure out, okay, what can I do with this? Like, even with Black Bitcoin Billionaires, like, Clubhouse brand new, it's very limited, everybody can't get in, but I'm like, here's an opportunity because I like the vehicle of which the communication is coming across, that it feels a lot better than even like a podcast, because we get to interact with people, especially when it's education. When it's an educational thing, it's far better to have a back and forth dialogue and not necessarily just a monologue. So yeah, I've been in entrepreneurship for a while, man. It's just my thing. I enjoy it. I love it.
Yeah. What did you learn, being in real estate and running your own business at Cold Stone? And what kind of lessons did you learn there? And how does that affect the way you think about Bitcoin?
So real estate, I'm cool with, just don't like being a landlord. So it's also beautiful. Cold Stone, I like it, but I don't really like retail being 24/7, where you have to be hands-on pretty much. Like, it's always something. Some kid's gonna call in, something's gonna happen, right? I don't really like that. So those are two assets right there that are very labor intensive. So when you get to Bitcoin, here's an asset you just buy, set it and forget it, man. Like, and you're getting 200% annualized gains so far. So it's like, it's not the kind of work. I remember my son when I had the Cold Stones and I worked in the stores and stuff. My son, he said, "Mom, let's just leave Dad here. He lives here." Mm-hmm. Right? Because he was ready to go home. But hearing him say something like that is like, right?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like your kids don't understand it. But with Bitcoin, it's like, I see them probably more than I want to now. So right. You know what I mean? So it's the difference, man.
What do you teach your kids about Bitcoin?
Same exact stuff I teach everybody on Clubhouse. Same exact stuff. They know that I'm all about like freedom. They understand that I'm all about making sure that you can own your own, empowering yourself, self-sovereignty, self-sustainability. So I teach them the same exact things. Now, they, here's the thing. They don't, it's like, it's funny. My family, everybody, I've been telling everybody this. Not all of them listen. Because they, the thing, I guess, I don't know what it is. Everybody, I heard Terrence on Clubhouse say this the other day. He was dealing with the same thing. He's like, the people around him don't listen, have never listened to him about Bitcoin. Right? It's like, it's a weird phenomenon. I told my son, I said, I've built two clubs, over 25,000 people that listen to me about Bitcoin. And I said, you guys are sporadic about when you put money into it. Now, my daughter, she's different. She asked me when it's a dip. She always like, I sent you some money on Cash App. Give me some more. Because she's not old enough to actually use Cash App. So whenever there's a dip, she always sends me extra money that she has laying around to buy the dips. But my sons, they're a little bit different. So I don't know. It's just, I teach them, but you know how it is, man. The teenagers, they're not going to listen to dad.
Yeah. What do you teach them about love?
Oh, bro. Everything about love, man. My biggest thing is what I try to explain to people is love is sacrifice. Like, what are you willing to give? And that's the same thing with like marriage and everything, bro. Like, what are you willing to give up? You can tell how much somebody loves something by what they're willing to give up for it. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, that right there tells you a lot about love, because it's really about giving. There's givers and takers in this world, and the givers, you know, they, a lot of times they may get used by the takers, but that just shows you how much more love they actually have. And that right there, that kind of love, it actually is like, it probably lasts longer than anything else you leave with your kids. If you teach your kids how to love, like, that love's going to spread to their kids, and that love's going to spread to their kids. If you teach them that, like, that kind of thing lasts longer than money, because kids smoke up money, right? Like, I told somebody this the other day, some of the richest people I know, their kids are like some of the biggest druggies I know. You know what I'm saying? Right, right. So it's like they just sitting there smoking the money that their daddy worked so hard to create and make, and they just smoking it away. And before you know it, they probably won't have any of it left. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like love is that thing that you can keep passing down generation to generation. That's that wealth that allows you to build wonderful families. You know what I mean? So
yeah, that's really interesting in terms of in that case, they're getting freedom. And freedom could be a double-edged sword, you know. What do you, you know, talk to your kids about freedom, both from the perspective of, like, how to be free in this world, but also, like, what to do with your freedom that you might, inherit or have as a privilege?
Yeah, freedom. That's the thing. Love, freedom, all of that is on the same side of the spectrum to me. Like, there's literally a line, I think, right? Love's on this side, hate's on this side. Freedom's on this side, bondage is on this side, right? I really believe like that. You can see those things. Like that sacrifice for love, the same sacrifice you have to have for freedom. Yeah, you're going to give up some convenience, and you're going to have to be accountable. You're going to have to be responsible. Like, those are the things. If you want to be free, there is a cost. Most people, I think it was Frederick Douglass, he said that if you're not willing to die, you're not ready to be free. Hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, because freedom definitely comes with a cost. It's easy to be dependent and allow somebody else to control and do everything for you. So that freedom that Bitcoin provides, you got to have accountability, responsibility, those kind of things. So, yeah, I definitely teach my kids about that as well, you know, because it's that freedom. Because that's the thing. That freedom, it just basically means you have a choice. And then you have to ask yourself, which side of this line am I going to make my choices from? Am I going to make my choices from love, patience, kindness, right? Gentleness. Am I going to make my choices from hatred, greed, envy, right? Lust, like those things. It just depends. And you always have a choice. Everybody got a choice. So when you're free and you have that freedom, then it's on you. And you got to recognize that whatever decisions you make, the consequences are because of your choice that you made. Yeah. And sometimes people don't like your freedom. We see that right now. People don't like you to be free. We see what's happening right now in the government by them trying to regulate things like Bitcoin and add taxes and talk about $10,000 and all of these other things. They don't want you to be free. Whenever they come and try to jump into a situation like Bitcoin and add their own rules to it, that just shows you they don't want you to be free. So you have to make a decision if you want to be free or not. And my decision is always, look, I'm going to control my own money.
Do you think people value freedom?
I think most people don't understand it. I think some people think they're free and don't realize how in bondage they are. Matter of fact, Harriet Tubman said it, right? She said, I would have freed more slaves if more of them would have recognized they were slaves. Mm. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. Like, because I think most people don't understand, like I said, the cost of being free. You know, the cost of not having masters. It's a very steep cost sometimes, because sometimes you by yourself. And a lot of people, you know, may not be able to make it by themselves. Like I said, I've been hustling my whole life. It's been few and far between. I've had a job, and that's been when I may have failed a business or something, right? And I go get a job just to make ends meet. But next thing you know, I'm back doing something entrepreneurial. You know what
I mean? Right.
So yeah.
How do you talk to people about motivation?
Oh, man, just the motivation has to come from within. And it has to come from a set of principles that you are guided by. Right. That's where that motivation comes from. Now you can have external motivation. Like here's the thing. People can inspire you. People can inspire you. And then that inspiration then motivates you from within, because it's something that hits you. But I think that motivation has to come from within if it's going to be real. Because if it's external, what happens is that whoever motivated you, if they fall off, you're going to fall off with them. And so how motivated are you really?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? If you don't have that, the old lady always, older lady, I ain't gonna say old lady, but yeah, she's older. Elder always says to me, she says, Lamar, people have to be convicted. Like, until they're convicted, no matter what you say or do, is going to actually get, that's the same thing you see with Bitcoin. You get, the people say you get Bitcoin at the price you deserve, right? You gotta be convicted. You gotta, the person has to be convicted. And until they have it for themselves and they find that conviction, then everything you say is going to be pretty much null, because if they only following you, you're going to slip. You're going to fall. You're going to not do everything perfect. And if they're following you and they see you miss that perfection by a little bit, that's going to give them an excuse to quit. And so if they don't find it within themselves, then they're not really motivated.
Right. Where do you find your humor? And, you know, I mean, how important, I mean, is that a huge part of your life? I'm assuming you come across as very friendly and very joyous.
Yes, very joyous. I just love life, man. It's a blessing, bro. My great uncle, you say, if you grinning, you winning. Right? He said, if you grinning, what's going on, nephew? If you grinning, you winning, boy, you winning. And I always used to be like, I get it. Cause that's the thing. Like, my joy and all of that comes from definitely from family. My humor definitely comes from my family. My grandmother's comedy, my dad comedy. Like, they just, it's, we always have a lot of humor. And truthfully, that's based on the fact that we have a lot of love. Like, my family is full of love, man. Man, I got teary eyed. Hold on. They just hit me. But real talk, man. Like, yeah, my family, man, full of love, whole family. Like, my grandmother was the kind of woman that'll take in other people's children and raise them. You know what I'm saying? Protecting them, like both sides. I am so blessed, man, to be in the position I am as far as like family, because I know everybody don't have it. You know what I mean? So yeah, all of that, my joyousness, my fun, all of that stuff comes purely from my family first. And then the neighborhood I grew up in, you know, you were more likely to get roasted than you were to get fought. You know what I mean? Like, we would just talk about you so bad that you want to fight. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was more like that kind of thing. Like, we got some cold roasters in my neighborhood, man. It's cold-blooded ones. Yeah. So, yeah, that's where it comes from, man.
Yeah, well, with the clubs just starting, it's like your families are growing. The clubs are growing faster. The only thing growing faster than Bitcoin. I'm kind of curious what you think of the culture of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's so funny? I was not aware of the Twitter culture of Bitcoin until I got on Clubhouse. Twitter was more like, I don't know, it wasn't like my social media that I used a lot. I had a Twitter, of course, until I got on Clubhouse. And then Clubhouse opened me up to Twitter Bitcoin, which that's a completely different world than what I am used to. Because I come from the old Bitcoin days where I used to go to conferences and it was mostly like libertarians, anarchists, right? And I saw it change when there was a conference called Coin Summit that kind of changed everything. Because when I went to that conference, everybody had on blue and gray suits, right? And so it was kind of like, I just left the conference in Texas that was, you know, we in the basement of a bookstore called Brave New Books, and the guys had M16s on, or AR-16s or whatever on the chest, AR-15s on the chest. And they were like, I don't know what the guns are, but they had that on. It's like flip-flops and boots, and we in the basement, and, you know, it was different. We watching like some kind of documentary, and I had just been, it was my introduction to the space. So I'm just meeting all of these types of people. And I wouldn't consider myself an anarchist or a libertarian. I consider my, I don't know, I guess some of my views are definitely libertarian from a freedom perspective, but I don't consider any political party my party. But at the same time, it was a different feeling from that of people who are using it to get free and be, you know, sovereign, to Coin Summit, which was, how can we make some money off of this? So I think the community is as diverse as the uses that people use for it. Venezuela, they use it a different way. Right. Nigeria, they're using it a different way. United States, we use it a different way. So I think the community is just as diverse as the world, right? And I think that's what's so beautiful about the tool that is Bitcoin. I think it's dope in that way.
Yeah, man. How did you find Bitcoin, or what signal came across your way in the various noise in the world? But and what did it mean to you then?
Man, when I found it, it was a VC. We had built this application, and we went to go talk to the VC about it. One of my first times ever going out to Northern California, out to the Bay Area. And it was, what was it called? IO Ventures or something like that. It was on, yeah, I think it's what it was called, IO Ventures. But we went there, and one of the VCs there, he said, I see you guys have this game platform, and I see you got a digital currency. Have you ever heard of Bitcoin? And I was like, and I found out that was 2011. I always say it was 2012, just because I just couldn't, I don't remember dates well at all. So the reason why I knew it was 2011 now is because I went back through my Facebook and found the picture that I took outside of the place. Mm-hmm. So this was in 2011. He said, have you heard of Bitcoin? And so I thought he said in the meeting, big coin, like B-I-G. And so when we left, I talked to my business partner. I was like, man, you hear him talk about this Bitcoin? He said, I think he said Bitcoin. And then he looked it up on his phone. He's like, look. And I looked at it, and I was like, oh, man, this ain't got nothing to do with what we're doing. Like, we got our own thing. We're building Chuck E. Cheese online. That's really what it was, like a Chuck E. Cheese online. And then fast forward, and I saw it was like an all-time high. And it brought it back to me, like, this is that Bitcoin he's talking about. It was like in some financial report. And I was like, that's that Bitcoin he was talking about. And so that day I hurried up and I went and got the white paper. I said, I'm gonna look into it more. And when I read the white paper, that's what ended it for me. Because I saw it. Like, I saw freedom. I saw the freedom to control my own money, to have my own money. And this money that was outside of this system that I never thought was just in the first place. Right. I saw it was almost like Harriet Tubman finding a path that could get her all the way to the north. It was like, ah, there it goes. That's the North Star. Right. Recognize if I keep following that, I'm up. Right. It's that kind of thing. So I was like, that turned me into a freaking Bitcoinaholic. I started just diving down the rabbit hole. And me being a technical person, I was like, I have to build something for this technology. I have to figure out how to make a wallet. I was just researching. And I remember at the time I told my business partner that after that night I stayed up looking at that white paper and reading everything else. I told him, I said, listen, I was like, you're gonna have to run the business while I go, you know, try to figure out how I can build something with this. He was like, that's cool. I got you. So shout out to Leif Taylor, man. Without Leif Taylor, man, none of this would even be possible, man. So shout out to my business partner, Leif Taylor. But yeah, man, so I started building the wallet. He put the design to it, and that's how we got the Fever wallet, man.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Fever wallet, but I also want to just dig into this more about Bitcoin and freedom money. And when you were going into the white paper, was inflation a concern of yours, or anything about the money not free to you at that point? Like, what made that bridge in your mind or that connection?
Because I'm a developer, right? And I always thought, like, it's my money in the bank. Why can't I just write an API to move my money? Mm-hmm. To me, it's just, you know, it seemed like it's a no-brainer. It's my money. So I should be able to have access to my money. Then you read the white paper and it says, basically, you have control over your money and I can program it. That's the kind of money I want right there. It wasn't about the inflation or anything, right? But it was, as I did more research, it was about hey, there's this banking system that I already, like I said, I've always talked bad about it anyway, just because it's debt slavery. So here's this banking system, and this thing sits outside of the banking system that I can't stand, that I really don't like. You know what I'm saying? And that's what changed it. Because now I'm looking at it like, okay, I can control this, and it sits outside the... Let's do it. Let's figure something out. I got to figure something out. So that's how it was, man. The freedom part was just like, I am free to do what I want with this asset, period. That to me is still powerful to me. Like, I don't need... I was talking to somebody the other day that was trying to build an app, and they were talking about, like, being able to build it into these different banking infrastructures and stuff. And I was like, think about that, man. You got to go get clearance from all of these people to be able to build an app into your money. I said, just build it on Bitcoin, because then you can just build all of the... You know, anything you want. You understand what the protocol does. You can just build on top of that. Like, just build it on top of Bitcoin. Like, if you're going to use a financial system, just build it like that and then keep it moving. And then you don't have to ask nobody for anything, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I still can't. I keep tripping over how it's not about how much Satoshis you have. It's just having any, because it is freedom money. And it just the concept of it, I think, will free your mind in a lot of different regards.
Right.
Yeah, and I want to know what you think of the Federal Reserve.
Let's see. What do I think? So first and foremost, I'm a part of the Illuminati. I'm going to go ahead and say that out loud. I have meetings. We have informational meetings every Wednesday. Old Donnie Trump and Barack, they're going to run the next one. Everybody thinks they're opposed. They're, come on, man. We're all in the same game. Elon, he's not allowed to come through because he keeps talking about Doge. So yeah, some of the Fed Reserve, some of the descendants, they show up every once in a while, but they think they're better than everybody else. I don't know why. I guess because they lending everybody money, so they figure that, you know, you got to come get money. They're like the Lannisters in Game of Thrones. they lending everybody money. Just to be real though, I think building a system on debt in the first place is crazy, right? And here's the thing, right? Who got all of the gold when they went and confiscated it from the banks in 1933? Where did that gold go? Fed Reserve, maybe? Maybe the Fed Reserve thought that, you know, this gold that you put up in the bank is now theirs, and they gave you a little something back in return for it. But then they took your gold, and at the time, I guess it was, what, 20 bucks an ounce or something crazy? It was something low. And now it's almost $2,000 an ounce. So what happened to all the gold that everybody had, right? It's like, it to me, it feels too much like the mob or something, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how the mob actually is, just mob movies, but it feels like that, like movies off the mob, right? Like movies about the mob. It's like, it feels like they kind of like loaned you the money, and then now they're shaking you down to get it back by way of the treasury. I don't really get down with the fact that the Federal Reserve is doing the things that they're doing the way they're doing it, because it keeps all of us in a present state of always having to, you know, work for nothing, really. Like, you're trading your time for something that they're diluting. And I can't really put it all on the Federal Reserve, because the treasury has something to do with that too. You know what I'm saying? They work together. We see that. You see what's going on now. So, yeah, I don't really get down with the Federal Reserve. It's so crazy to me that we allow this private organization to kind of run us, right? To kind of run everything that we're doing, man. I don't get down with it. So,
yeah. What do you think of a world? What would you make of a world without Bitcoin in it right now?
It would just be like how I grew up. Right? Here's the thing. Sometimes you don't know you can get free until somebody presents a way to be free, to get free, right? You don't even know you're a slave until somebody presents something to you to allow you to be like, you know what? Maybe I am a slave. Maybe I was looking at this all wrong. Maybe these overlords and masters don't have my best interest at heart. And so when you introduce something like that, it's almost like I always talk about how the democratization of communication, the democratization of information, like back in the day, all of that stuff was in the hands of the elite. Like, only the elite had libraries. And even when you look at slavery, like, they didn't want the slaves to read. But now you have the internet, and we almost have too much to read, like, too much information. So imagine all of those things, the democratization of information, and now you're democratizing money. Like, that's another freedom, another way to get that out of the hands of the oligarchy, or get that out of the hands of a few elite and put that into the hands of everybody. Like, that to me is, it's huge, man. It's humongous.
Yeah. It was really interesting, the connection that I heard you mention, where you kind of linked monetary rights with civil rights in regard to things like accredited investors. And yes. I'm just wondering if you could maybe expand a little bit about that.
That to me is a civil rights movement that we need to have and should have had. How do we say we're a capitalist nation and we don't give everyone the right to invest in whatever they want to invest in? The moment you take my right away from me to be able to deploy capital is just wrong. Who are you to tell me that I don't know what I'm investing in? Who are you to tell me that you're protecting me from myself? If I want to risk $100, if I want to risk $1,000, I should be able to, in the same way that I can go to the mall and pay $1,000 for a purse, a Birkin bag. And I know I'm probably wrong on the numbers, ladies, so don't kill me. But you know what I'm saying? Like, in the same way I could take $1,000 and purchase some Jordans, I should be able to go purchase stock in any company that I want to. Yeah, that should tell you right there in and of itself. And they're trying to change some of it, right? The Jobs Act and what's going on with crowdfunding, but there's still limitations. There should be no limitations on the deployment of capital by any human being. That is a right. That is my right to risk what I want to risk and try to get some return. And if I lose that 1,000, if I lose that 100, so be it. Then I can learn. I did this before. I bet on penny stocks when I first started investing in stocks. And because I lost myself and my dad money, lots of money, not lots relatively, right, to myself and my dad, but lots of money because I got him into it as well, it made me actually go and find Benjamin Graham's book, The Intelligent Investor. It made me find Warren Buffett. It made me, you know what I'm saying? First, Warren Buffett first, because I was like, he's best investor from what everybody's saying. Then I went and found his teacher. He had a book called The Intelligent Investor. I read that book, and it just really, everything started coming into view. Then I read like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I started going down that path because I had already made assumptions on what I was going to invest in, lost my money, and realized I wasn't doing it right. That's what failure is for. And if you're a computer scientist, software developer, you understand failure is your friend. So I wasn't that then, but I realized that all of these rules are the same. Like, failure is your freaking friend. Because if you're not failing, you're not trying. Period. So that's the thing. It's like, I don't know why it pisses me off so much to think that they still have these rules and try to put all of this regulation around. We need to protect the small investor. And it's like, no, you don't protect us from consumerism. You don't protect us from the lottery. You don't protect a small guy from anything else. You let them put their money into anything else outside of investments. That should tell you right there that this is not a true capitalist society, and it's nothing but crony capitalism, and it's ridiculous, period.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sorry,
I'm kind of passionate about that, man.
Yeah, I love seeing the passion come out. I was wondering if Big Mar ever got angry. There's a lot to get angry about out there, you know, and, you know, it's very interesting. You've talked a lot about how things don't really pop off unless they got the support of the Black community, whether it's Clubhouse, Cash App. And I think a lot about, like, you know, the areas where there's still a meritocracy in this world, in this country, which is probably sports, maybe music to some extent, you know, like, is definitely takes talent, but I don't know if it's all meritocracy over there. Sure. I think comedy, right? And like, I look at like my favorite artists, they happen to be Black artists usually, but it's not because they're Black, it's because they're the best, right?
Right.
But then we're talking about how, like, you know, Clubhouse is popping off because that's the support of the Black community. You got 100,000 members in Black Bitcoin billionaires. And, you know, I'm wondering, like, where do you see things going in terms of like Bitcoin And when I say community support here, I don't ask you to speak for a community, but like all communities, but like working people and even, you know, non-working people and people who are well-to-do, but just not the elite.
Right. You know? I think where we're going is we still have to keep educating, because really the mindset is what we're trying to free people of. Like, we have to keep showing people that they are in bondage when it comes to their money, and that the money that they do have is the reason why they're in bondage. Right. I think that's the thing that we have to keep educating. But I think those communities, I can already see we've onboarded thousands of people into Bitcoin within the Black Bitcoin billionaires. I used to give out Satoshis all the time back in the day, but never at the scale that we've been able to do with the Black Bitcoin billionaires. Like, not at all. Not even close, man. Like I've been able to give some away and people buy some, but it's like we are able to onboard so many people into Bitcoin. And the whole thing is that with the hope that they'll hold on, right? Because that's the hardest part. But I think that's going to change communities. Because if more people start to recognize it, what happens is you start changing even some of the way that you live. Because once you have Bitcoin, you start saving. Like, you just start having a habit of saving. You know what I mean? You get just like, oh, I'm not spending that money. I'm going to go use this money to buy more Bitcoin. Once you start understanding it. And even that is a great principle to have, is to learn to save your money, to save it into an asset that actually appreciates over time, instead of actually spending your money and going into consumption all the time, to put that money into an asset that actually gains you more money. Like, that principle in and of itself, even outside of Bitcoin, is huge. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Do you think Bitcoin like will become cool? And what I mean by that is, you know, like back in the day, if I found a cool stock or, you know, a good real estate deal, it wasn't like I would call all my friends or we would get on Twitter and talk about it all the time. And I'm wondering, you know, if you see an inflection point with Bitcoin and savings and kind of its integration with the culture, with the American culture.
No, I think so, man. I think you know how it is. It's the bell curve, right? The early adopters, then we get to this. I think as we start moving up this way to where we start getting more adoption, yeah, it's going to become more cool, of course. It'll become more cool. And it really boils down to the types of tools we're able to use that we can enter people into it. Because if people can't understand it, and if it's still difficult for them to actually use it or actually transact with it or whatever, because this is later, right? This is when we get to hyper Bitcoinization. That's when I think it'll become cool. Gold is not cool to anybody except for back when people were using gold and putting it on their neck, necklaces, right? Like, gold as an investment thing, like the people who I knew who wore big dookie chains and all of that, they and Cuban links, they didn't know about gold as being an investment. Right? They were wearing it because it was nice, it was dope. It's the same way kings wore it back in the day. They wore because they were kings, and it's like shows a status symbol. I think we'll get to the point where Bitcoin even becomes like a status symbol. If you have Bitcoin, and I think it's already happening, man. People immediately go, oh, you were early in Bitcoin. Ooh, you sure probably got a lot, right? It's like that whole mentality. And I think that'll get even more cool as somebody like a Beyonce or a Jay-Z or somebody comes out and talks about their Bitcoin. I think that, look, you see what's going on with Elon. Elon made a freaking dead coin, like, resurrect and become a zombie. Like, just because he was Elon, because people think he's cool, they think he's smart. So he was able to resurrect an entire coin's value just because of him. What do you think happens to Bitcoin if more people who have probably even greater pop influence than Elon get into Bitcoin? You know?
Yeah. I agree. And I'm just... You know, if we go through a point where we go through hyper-Bitcoinization and it just gets baked in, or does it become more a part of the way we live our lives on a broader scale and we kind of mass culture? And right now we're seeing where like mass culture, I would think, is kind of going against Bitcoin with like a lot of energy FUD and things that's being thrown at it. And that's right. One of the reasons I bring it up right now. You know, on one hand, you look at Clubhouse and things are blowing up, touching a lot of people. And, you know, at the same time, you know, you see what's in the news and you see the bigger narratives.
Right. I think that's right. I mean, the FUD always comes, and most of it is literally that. It's just FUD. And I think it bothers me because here we go again with distractions, right? It's like all of these distractions. And I told somebody the other day, I said, the next FUD is going to come out and they're going to say Bitcoin kills babies. Like, because they've run out of things to say. It's like, it's been the same FUD. I've heard the same stuff. There's a guy on Twitter that I've had lunch with several times. Very, 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 very intelligent guy. Older guy, went to MIT. And his thing was even back, what was that, 6-8 years ago, he was saying about energy FUD. He and I would sit down. He said, I hear you into this Bitcoin. I understand what's going on, but I think it's just a waste of energy, right? So he's been saying this for a very long time. So this stuff is not new at all. And I think they can't find anything new. And that's what I said. The next thing is, we want to deter you by telling you that Bitcoin kills babies. Bitcoin miner radiation kills babies within 3-mile radius, right? That's the kind of stuff you're going to hear next. And I think that's only because if you can't stop something that you want to control, then you try to push fear into it as much as possible so that people will be distracted and deterred from doing it. And I think that's like, I think that's that stuff right there. We have to, that's what we're combating, right? By educating every day, every single day.
Yeah. What else do you think we could do to help, you know, get the word out and, you know, get more people involved?
I mean, it has to, listen, the technology is to be peer-to-peer. I think the only way you're going to get this out to the folks is peer-to-peer. And that's how it's been growing. That's why I love it. It's such an organic growth. There's no CEO of Bitcoin, no marketing department, no social media engineer or head that is actually doing this. It's just people. People who have figured out and understand Bitcoin that are doing what they can to tell other people about it. Right. It's almost benevolent in a way. It's like, hey, I got this wonderful thing and I want to tell you about this wonderful thing I have. And it can help you out, too, because somebody's next 50 or 100 bucks is not going to do anything for me in Bitcoin. Thing. It's not going to move the market. It's not going to move it. It's not like we out here telling people, hey, do that. Even somebody who puts in 5 million is not going to move the market for me. Right. It's like you can put 5 million in today and you're not going to see a significant price rise because the market is just that big. So clearly, if people are telling you about Bitcoin and telling you how great it is and what it's going to do and how it works and everything like that, they're doing it out of the kindness of their heart. Like some people's the way they do it is a little bit different. Yeah, go ahead, man. They're doing it out of the kindness of their heart, man. They're trying to show you how great it is at what they have. You feel me?
Yeah, man. And we've seen it lately. I mean, you know, Elon Musk and Tesla put $1.5 billion in. The market went up and then went down. Michael Saylor announces $10, $15 million buys and it doesn't move the market. It's the most liquid market in the world. On that note, in terms of like benevolency, what is potluck capitalism?
Oh man, yeah, man. That's what, hey. So the way I look at potluck capitalism, the way I look at capitalism is basically the king has a table and is set. And he gets everybody in the kingdom to come bring food to the table so that he can eat. That's pretty much what I say. It's like the king built a table. Yeah. The king's, that's his house. It's his castle. And he's saying, hey, you come and bring all of your talents and everything you know how to do, bring it to the table and I'm going to eat. And when I'm done eating, you're going to get the rest because I'm the one that built the table. I'm the one that built the castle, right? I'm the one that built the house. Well, that works in a kingdom type of a situation. And that's the way our system kind of works now. That's the way capitalism works. The one that puts up the risk is the one that gets it. The way I like it, though, is that let's say we still have the same king. And instead, he says, listen, instead of having the king's feast, we're going to have a potluck, which means everybody in the kingdom that brings food, all of you all will be able to participate and eat of the same food that I'm eating of as the king. And so they go around the table and make their plate and everybody sits down and everybody gets their plate full and everybody eats really well, right? I'm going to tell you this. Have you ever been to a potluck that there's no leftovers? No one has. No one has ever been to a potluck where there aren't leftovers. And the crazy part about it is that there's probably enough leftovers for the king to eat for the next 5 months. right? Or the next, at least next month, if you can keep it preserved. So if you understand that, then why can't businesses be built that way? To where now, if people are bringing their goods and their talents and their resources to the table, why can't they all share in that, right? And then the king, because it is his table, he gets all the leftovers when it's all said and done. For me, I think that'll provide a far more equitable workforce. I think it'll also provide, I even think you might even get to the point where you even have more profits. Because people will want to work there, they'll want to stay there. They, you know what I'm saying? It's like the In-N-Out managers. In-N-Out managers make six figures. Nobody ever leaves. There's no attrition in In-N-Out managers, people who work at In-N-Out managers, because they take care of their people, right? If you take care of your people and you create a system where people have equity in the system as well, I always believe that that will work out a whole lot better in the future and work when you while it's moving forward, right? That's a different type of capitalism, because there's still capital being injected. There's still resources, there's still talent, but now all of a sudden, the ones that are putting in the work are actually able to get their share of the food, no more, no less, get their share of it and continue to move on. And the person who's at the table, they get the leftovers. And if you bring a huge casserole and you're a fat guy and you get to eat, go on, eat, do what you do. Like, I get it. And then you go home. They go home, they come, they make more food, come back the next day, everybody shares, the king gets the leftovers. Think about it. Over time, he's gonna have a storehouse of leftovers. Period. And his people and the people that work in his kingdom are gonna love him for it. It's like we all get to have fellowship and work together and eat together and everybody's good, it'll work. So I think that's the way that we can potentially have things working, man, in this country. And then just in the world, period, we can make it to where it's more equitable for the people that are working so that you don't have these huge wealth gaps.
Right. Yeah, man. And, you know, I agree with everything you said there. And, you know, but sometimes people just don't really get it for themselves or, you know, don't ask. And I'd love for you to kind of tell us the story about the man at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah, man. I always talk about the man at the bottom of the hill. There's an old man sitting at the, it's really the mountain, right? There was an old man sitting at the bottom of the mountain and all of these young people, they see him sitting there. Yeah, they see him sitting there at the bottom of the mountain and they don't even say anything to him. They take off up the mountain and it's like the most gruesome mountain in the world. They take off up the mountain with all of the gear that they think they're supposed to have. And then they come back down and the man at the bottom, and I'm adding a little to it, but the man at the bottom looks and says, "Did you make it to the top?" "No, we didn't make it to the top." And they walk off and the next group comes and, you know, they got all their equipment and everything they heard they're supposed to have. And they come back down the mountain. He said, "Did you make it to the top?" "Nah, I didn't make it to the top. Didn't make it to the top." And then another guy comes and he sees a man at the bottom of the mountain and he walks over and he says, "Hey, man." He says, "How do you get to the top of this mountain? Have you ever climbed it before?" He said, "Yes, many times. I know exactly how to get to the top." And the man says, "Well, can you help me? Can you show me how to get to the top?" And he says, "Of course. I thought you'd never ask." And that's the thing, man, right? It's like many times we have people right around us who've been to tops of mountains and we pass them up because we think we have everything we possibly need. And we miss out on the opportunity to, especially elders. Yeah, I know you heard me say it earlier. I talk to my elders, man. Like those people that have been through the struggles, they might not understand technology, but they understand the essence of what the technology is doing. They understand you know what I'm saying? They wise enough to understand how connectivity helps people or whatever. And I think a lot of times we miss that, man. And it's like, we always want to go off and do it on our own and want to try to climb it on our own. And we wind up failing because we don't just talk to the man at the freaking bottom of the mountain. Look at him. Why do you think he's sitting at the bottom of the mountain? He looks as old as the mountain and you're not going to talk to him? Come on, man. That's the thing. So I think that's just something that I try to lead with all the time and try to find those people who have done it before me. When I had the ice cream stores, I went and talked to one of the largest franchisees. Matter of fact, he was the largest franchisee of Applebee's. He was the biggest one in the whole country. I went and talked to him and said, "Look, man, I need you to mentor me on this because I know you know something about this," right? So I've always been that way. And I just think that's what, you know, what we should do, like figure out who's done it before, how they've done it, and learn. And I think that's why I enjoy teaching, because I do have knowledge that other people don't have. I've worked with all of these blockchains. I've done this stuff before, right? And so I'm trying to teach people, like, here are some of the headaches you're going to have. Yeah, go off and figure it out. But at the same time, if you really want to get to the top of the mountain, you might need to talk to somebody who's climbed it before.
Yeah. I feel with Bitcoin, especially for a lot of us, there wasn't necessarily someone at the bottom of the mountain to ask questions right away. And I would probably be the guy at the bottom of the mountain screaming at everybody, nobody listening to me. And I feel like you would be the guy in the story, and you'd be patient with the people walking by you. And I'm kind of curious, you know, with what I see with Bitcoin, though, is because there wasn't always someone at the bottom of the mountain. And especially for you, when you came across the white paper, I mean, someone told you about it, but you did your own research and you had to figure out for yourself, right? And sometimes it's like, okay, I'm looking for a tool and I need to find this tool because I want to do things and I can't do them until I find this tool. Right. Versus, I'm not looking for anything here. Oh, here's this tool. That's cool. And then you like it. Maybe then you figure out things that it can do for you that you didn't even know you wanted to do. So in that regard, has Bitcoin changed you at all?
Yes. Because look, like I said earlier, it was about control and being able to control my own money and everything like that. And so earlier, I literally spent 2 Bitcoin on getting the transmission fixed in an old truck that I have the transmission nor the truck. Right. And so of course I did it because I thought, yeah, I need this truck, man. I got to have this truck to make sure I get to here and there and everywhere. But then when you look back, it's like you start realizing, did I really need the truck because I don't have it now? Right? Is it something that I really needed? Could I have rode the bus and kept those 2 Bitcoin? So you start looking at it. You start looking at things from a completely different light. It's like once you start realizing that it's more than just being able to control it, that it is hard money, right? Because I didn't look at it as hard money. I looked at it more as a currency because that's all I was doing, was giving away. I had a wallet, right? It was like, it's the coolest money I can send around, da, 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 da. And then as I learned more about hard money, I was like, golly. You know what I'm saying? Like early on, we were talking about it from Kari shells and all of that, right? We were talking about it that way. And you start understanding a little bit about hard money. But when you finally get it, it's like, yeah, I just spent 2 Bitcoin on the transmission. Ain't that some stuff? So that has changed me a lot, like a whole lot, man. Like I think it just gives you, and plus it gives you a low time preference, an even lower time preference. I consider myself a bit of a patient person, but when it comes to something like Bitcoin, it makes you even more patient, right? It's like I always use the analogy of weeds and trees. It's like Bitcoin is like planting a tree. Not weeds. You're not going to see it grow really rapidly, and you're not going to, you know what I'm saying? You're not going to see the fruit from it really, really quickly, but it's like an apple tree, because that apple tree can live for a very long time, but it might take you about 10 years before you start getting your first apple. But think about it. Inside of that apple are a whole bunch of other seeds. If you start spreading weeds around, yeah, they grow up fast, but they die fast. They grow up fast, they die fast, right? A tree, you got to be patient and wait for the fruit, man. And I think that's what changes you with Bitcoin, because you wind up getting to the point where high rises don't bother you and real lows don't bother you at all. Now, it's just like, it is what it is. You know that it's going to produce apples soon. And you know when it produces apples that your generations to come can eat off of those apples if you continue to keep watering. And that's dollar cost averaging, right? You keep watering and making sure you're taking care of your tree. And you keep taking care of your tree, you water, you add to it. Then when those apples start to come, there'll be an apple tree in the backyard that you can go out and harvest from here until, you know, several generations. You know what I mean? That's the coolest part for me, brother.
Yeah, so dope. On that tip, you said you can't have generational wealth unless you have generations. I thought that was really fresh, really insightful. I just can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this conversation, man. This has been so
dope. Yeah, you too, man. This is real cool.
Yeah, man. Definitely, you know, leave us with any parting words and let people know with all the places they could find you and where you're doing the good work.
Yeah, man. My handle is BIGMARH, Big Mar, everywhere, with an H at the end. Everybody tries to spell it how they sound it, but I put the H at the end because the way my dad says it, he says, Big Ma, Ma. That's what he says. Like, you hear the ha at the end of it. So nice. I always pay homage to him with that name. So it's B-I-G-M-A-R-H everywhere. And the only thing I always say, I say it every day on Clubhouse. I say it when I end on Facebook. Live, love, love life, man. Like, if you live love, you will love your life. And I truthfully believe that. Just live love in your life, you'll be joyous. Because you can't walk around loving people and be hating them at the same time and being mad at the world. Because we only got one life to live, brother. One. One life to live. And every day that you spend hating somebody else, that's energy that's taken from your life. It's like the force. You literally are draining the force out of your system. So use the force within, man. Love people. Love your family. You know what I'm saying? Hold them tight. And don't take nothing for granted. Not even your next breath. Don't take nothing for granted, because guess what? The alternative is deadly. You feel me?
I feel you. Mad respect. I don't know how you do it so joyous, so much love on 3 to 4 hours of sleep a night. Man, I'd be cranky. This has been incredible, bro. Thank you so much. Yeah,
thank you, man. That's so funny, man. Everybody says that. And I told my wife, my daughter, because she's like, Dad, you always are so hype. I was like, because it comes from within. It's something, if you got energy within, you can keep generating it, man. Anybody who sleeps a whole lot, that's why they live so long. People are like, your life expectancy go, yeah, because you didn't live life. You barely living what I lived. You sleeping most of it. Yeah, so yeah, man. Thank you, brother.
Thank you. You're getting more time in than most.
See you, man.
Thanks. Peace. Big Mar on love, family, patience, potluck capitalism, DCA, and monetary freedom right here on the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And thank you for listening. If you dig the show, make sure to subscribe, share, and learn. Stack sats, water your trees, and stay humble. This is Cedric. Peace.